Good morning, everybody. My name's Sandy Beach. I'm an alcoholic. And it's nice having such good friends. And sometimes I don't think I would have made it without some of the folks that were helping out. I've really had a good time, but I found that I overdid it. And I just am going to ask a favor. That when I get through, don't form a line. And just let us get going. And I can lie back down and all of that. I know that's not normal, but I'd greatly appreciate it. And besides, we talked forever last night, so that's enough. I've been asked to talk about steps 10 and 11. And I love the steps. I love where you are when you get there. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. And then one of the more unusual steps, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us. It's the only place I've ever seen where you only pray for knowledge of His will and the power to carry it out. And I think that was an interesting choice that Bill made, because when we're new and not used to prayer, and somebody said, just pray for it, and you do, and nothing happens, you're liable to go, well, this stuff doesn't work, and have sort of a apprehensive feeling about it. So, but he does, in the literature, say, you can go ahead and pray for specific things, but at the end, put if it is your will. And so that kind of... Lately at meetings, and I can't remember this, I brought it. Instead of the promises prior to the Lord's Prayer, a lot of groups have been reading the last paragraph on page 164. And I'm starting to really like it. I'm starting to just go, I like that better than the promises. And so I just wanted to read those two paragraphs and talk about them. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. The book is meant to be suggestive. I thought we had to do all that stuff. So what do you suppose they're talking about? They're saying that we are going to show you the results of a series of steps. And based on those results that you see in us, we suggest that you try it. It's a program of attraction. It's not a set of commandments. It is saying, you look at us, and if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length, these are the steps that we took. And so later on it says, obviously you can't transmit something you haven't got. What is it that we are trying to transmit? We're trying to transmit the fact that we have a connection with God, and it shows. That's what Bill saw in Ebby. He wasn't paying attention to any of the words he was saying. Ebby said, I got religion. Good, I'll be joining you. He was saying, he'll get over that. That's a bunch of, you know, I grew up, I don't believe in any of that stuff. But he couldn't stop looking at him. It was impossible for his friend to look this good and to have that much peace and to have whatever energy was coming out of him to be happening at that moment. So that's what's being transmitted. So, steps See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. So the whole point, and I'm thinking, you know, that the authors, they got to the end of the book and they said, what should we really highlight before we wrap this up? And what are they highlighting? We're highlighting, the book is meant to be suggestive only. We have put everything that we know in this book, and we realize we know only a little. So when we finish reading the book, we know a little. Doesn't sound like we're getting much for our buck here. So where does all the rest come from? Where does all the rest come from? God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. That's where the most comes from. Years ago, it seemed to me that the book can be made so rigid and formalized and, as Bill called it, biblical, that it seemed as if the book was the goal. And it's really not. It's a treasure map. And the goal is God. And so that's the way to treat this, is that this is going to take you there. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. And then I'll repeat that. See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And then this is the great fact. So I don't think it can be emphasized more when you just simply say, this is the summary of the whole thing. See to it that your relationship and great events will come to pass. Now, we could compare that, and we could make up a different sentence where I say, see to it that you're involved in service continuously. But then I would have to say, and some good events will come to pass. Not great. Good. Lots of good things are done by us human beings. But as Bill said, the good is the enemy, biggest enemy of the best that there is. And so to go beyond that, so that we are guided in our decisions, instead of making very good decisions that are very helpful to a lot of people, but maybe there's a higher level that we could be led to, and you end up straightening out some situation that you never would have planned on getting involved in. And so I just get a great deal of pleasure out of looking at this summary. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And then we have the promise that doesn't come true. You will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. The other thing that I like to premise or start with when I'm thinking about any step is the one step that we're urged to work to perfection, which is the first step. And if there is a sentence that captures that, it's the first sentence in the 12 and 12 where it says, who cares to admit complete defeat? Practically no one. There's a great deal of difference between admitting defeat and admitting complete defeat. A tremendous difference. The example I like to use was back in World War II, when we'd finished all the islands and we were going to have to invade Japan. And President Truman was informed about the atomic bomb, and the decision was made that this may be the ticket to avoiding the loss of millions of lives in battle. And so they dropped it. And the horrors were just awful. And they went to the Japanese and said, are you ready to unconditionally surrender? And they said, we're very close, but we have a few conditions. We want to keep a little bit of a navy. We want our emperor to continue with this, and we want that. And they said, that's not unconditional. We need you to surrender unconditionally. Well, we're not ready. So about 4 days later, they dropped another one on Nagasaki. And suddenly, even though there was still a lot of arguing, there was unconditional surrender. I mean, that's quite a difference, right, between defeat and complete defeat. One more atomic bomb. So, when we hold back on things, it's not a real atomic bomb, but it sometimes takes another atomic bomb to get us to surrender whatever we were conditioning our first step with. And that can show up many years later, that we had reservations about completely surrendering, and they come back to haunt us. So having set that up, that we've worked our way through the complete surrender, and we start through this journey, and the entrance to me, when I look at the 10th step, the thing that kind of opens the door and moves us in, are the promises in the 9th step. Because they're all written in spiritual verbs. This is no longer psychological or anything. This is nothing but spiritual. I mean, when self-seeking slips away, I don't know if there's any psychologists that have that as a term when you go to their office, that don't worry, 3 visits and self-seeking will slip away from here. And you will, all of the verbs are magical. And when you get to the very end, it says they will always materialize. Now, what kind of wonderful verb is that? It's going to materialize out of thin air. It's just going to happen. And then you are suddenly going to realize that what's happening to those other people is happening to you. You now are having an awareness. You may have already had it. Sometimes people get these spiritual insights early in their sobriety, and sometimes it takes a number of months. But when it happens suddenly. You just suddenly are aware that there is a creator for you and that you've been contacted. And that's enough proof. You don't need any more proof. The personal experience is the definition of God in AA. We don't have a AA God. We have a series of actions that produce an event in you that cannot be explained in any other way. And it almost forces you to say, so this is the God they're talking about. But there is no definition of the God. The God is limited to the experience that you just had. So we almost could say God as we experience him instead of understand. Because it's all based on experiences. Not somebody else's, yours. And you've either had it or you haven't. And until you do, this spiritual life is a theory. And you have to trust that it will happen. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But it will always materialize if we work for it. So the wonderful work of the first 9 steps is to cause this transformation to become really apparent. And it certainly changes our lives forever. But this will not just stay there. It has to be maintained. It's like you can't drink enough on Monday to last through Tuesday. At least I couldn't. So you had to go back and get some more. And so we end up with this step that just sounds like a repetition of inventory, of making amends. We're going to keep taking inventory and then promptly admit it when we're wrong. Why is that such a big step ahead of making amends themselves? It is because we now know the power of inventorying ourselves instead of the world, and the power of admitting that we're wrong. I remember hearing Chuck say one of his favorite things was to be wrong. Find one more idea that was wrong so that he could get rid of it. It's like getting rid of a thorn out of your back. But the human ego likes to play around with us and go, wait a minute, it's our thorn. We put it there. Let's not give it up yet. Because admitting that we're wrong seems so troublesome. And yet, it's the more times we can find something we're wrong about, just think of, we're just throwing away things that are wrong information. They're giving us the wrong perception on life. And it's making our lives much more painful than it needs to be. So after these promises come, we find ourselves in the big book being told that we have entered the world of the Spirit. And Bob mentioned that yesterday. Meaning that we're now operating in an area that we now want to start living in more. And there are different rules of operation there than there are in the material world. In the material world, they get more money than the other guy. I mean, we all know how that works, and it doesn't matter how you do it. A little cheating here, what the hell? Everybody does it. So we know all the rules of the material world. And the people that I've talked to that succeeded frankly admitted that it didn't make them happy, even though they were the winners. They just said, I'm greatly disappointed. I thought when I had three yachts, I would have peace, I would feel wonderful about myself, and that's when we have to remind everybody about the warning label on the back of the money. In God we trust. What the hell did you put your trust in this damn dollar bill? It's got instructions right on it. You don't need... Oh, I didn't see that. So we go into this world of the Spirit, and the problem is everything in the spiritual world is so simple that we dislike it immediately. Because if something's simple, there's no reason for not doing it. You can't find a cop-out. And so it says... And I'm paraphrasing. Now, you're in the world of the Spirit. This is what you do. If you get upset and resentful or angry, fearful, you ask God at once to remove them. Have you got it? I know, but what do I really do when I'm in the world of the Spirit here? You ask God at once to remove it. It seems too simple. And whenever I get to that point, I think about Bill's in a letter was describing AA, and he called it an utter simplicity encased in a complete mystery. So everything is so simple, but it can't be explained. It remains a mystery. And so we do it, and then we get the results. And then we do it. And so here is this opportunity during the day to maintain this contact and to treat our fellow men in the highest level that we can. And this can be mostly arrived at by maintaining this relationship that we just established. When we're the first ones, when a conflict develops, to admit that we're wrong and suggest that maybe we start over again. Look, I'm sorry, I just got a little this way or that way. It causes a different energy no matter where we are. And when we cause the different energy wherever we go, it appears that people are getting better than they used to be. When you go into the dry cleaning and your suit isn't ready for your daughter's wedding, and the clerk has to come over and tell you, and you say, "Don't worry, I have another suit," the clerk is astounded because they were shuddering, thinking of what they're going to have to tell this guy. His daughter's getting married and the suit isn't ready. And as we do that wherever we go, it is coming naturally. It is not something that we have to plan. It is when we're in that state, this is how we just are. And at the end of the day, you just have a sense that you ran into the nicest people all day long. And that this world is really a pleasant place to live in. And it's all being caused because of that energy. It's all being caused because we are trying to stay with this contact and putting people's interests on a level with our own. Now, when Bill gets over to the 12 and 12, I used both books in my own personal life and found a great deal in both of them. And I have my favorites, and I think this does better than that. And in the 10th step, they both are dynamite. And the reason I'm saying that is that Bill introduces the spiritual axiom in the 10th step in the 12 and 12, which when I first read it, made no sense whatsoever. But axiom sounded important, you know what I mean? Do we have any other axioms in the book? This may be the only one, I don't know, but I went with this. This is really important, this is an axiom. Said, if something disturbs me, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. And I'm going, this is not an axiom, it's a trick. That's what it is. If something disturbs me, there's something wrong with me. Somebody goes over and does some stupid thing, it gets me upset, and there's something wrong with me. What's wrong with me? You're upset. Oh. Okay, I could say that being upset is wrong. Okay, I'll go along with that. What we have, Sandy, is a way for you to get unupset without anybody else having to do anything. They don't have to change. They don't have to do a single thing. Really? Yeah, that's why it's an axiom. It's that powerful. It's guaranteed to work. Absolutely guaranteed. anytime you get disturbed. What we're doing is we're changing the primary purpose of the activity to becoming undisturbed. We're changing the rules of the card game. The guy who stays the least disturbed gets all the chips. You follow what I'm saying? That's the new rules. So this game here is called the least disturbed wins. So if we can learn how to be the least disturbed, then we're going to win. Well, it gives us in about two sentences, a list of four activities, and one of them is self-restraint. And we all know what that is. It's something happens, we get upset, and then we act before we think about anything. And then as the words are going across the room towards our boss's desk, we try to retrieve them before they get there, because this is not going to be good if he hears what we just said. Or the send button. Oh, geez, whiz. So self-restraint is something that we practice, we pray for. Clancy was talking about my friend Ed Chandler. He had this thing where when he left his house in the morning on the way to work, he let four people be wrong ahead of time. And it's just, you know, they could just say, well, you're the one that screwed it up. Yeah, okay. And then he had I think it was Thursday, he let everybody drive anywhere they wanted. Which was creating a cushion of self-restraint so that we have time to reflect on what we're going to do over whatever it was that got us so upset. And the second thing is an honest analysis of what's wrong. What is really going on here? Generally, that involves calling our spiritual advisor, calling our sponsor. And when I do that, I tell the person on the other line, you know, can I run something by you? Which means the whole thing's going to take 45 seconds. So even if they're at work, they can go, okay, go, because they know I'm going to just summarize something. And I go, look, I was at work. I had written a memo for my boss. I thought I did a pretty good job. He came out and called the office attention and said, I just read the worst memo that's ever been written in this company by Sandy Beach over there, and it really is awful. So that's the gist of the thing. And sponsor said, well, read the memo to me. He said, you know, I agree with your boss. That really is. What is that? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make this. It doesn't make that. When this thing calms down, you go in there and tell them that you're going to write a better memo and that you're sorry you didn't take the time to get it right. And then the next time, the memo may be perfect. And there's absolutely no reason that I experience this terrible embarrassment in front of the office. And so what do I do now? I forgive them. That's the end. It's all over. It was okay for him to yell and do that. Go ahead. I'm not playing the game of who wrote the best memo. I'm playing the game who can get undisturbed the quickest. You forgot. Those are the new rules. And as I get undisturbed, and my boss sees me not reacting like that, generally a conversation will come up, and I'll find out that his wife just told him he's leaving, or she's leaving him, or something happened. Had I known about it, would have made a great deal of difference. And so the simple little formula for staying undisturbed is at our disposal at any time. And it means we're going to have to get better at forgiveness. Forgiveness is not used as well as it should be in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's there, we understand it. And my suggestion is that you decide that you, from now on, you're going to be a forgiving person. Forget what you've been in the past, that your modus operandi is to be a forgiving person. That is the first thing that is going to be done. And I'm not going to go into all of that, but I had that helped me a great deal when my daughter was murdered. And I was able to forgive the person that right that moment. And that is where the power of forgiveness is in the moment. And I always have to go back to my sponsor when he was trying to teach me this. And some guy I had borrowed $10 in Quantico in the Marine Corps and got transferred somewhere, and I wasn't going to get the money. And I went to him and I said, well, what do? We get the MPs and we go get this guy. He says, why don't you let him off the hook, $10, and forgive him? I got six kids, so this is a lot. You know, this was in the 60s. Finally, I said, all right. And then a couple days later, he says, how do you feel about that? And I said, actually, I feel pretty good about that. And it was about 4 or 5 months later, and something similar happened, only it was $50. Now, that's not 10. This is a considerable difference between 10. And the guy was gone. I obviously wasn't going. So he said, well, why don't you forgive him? I said, let me think about it. So I went home and I thought about it. And I came back and I said, I'm always suspicious. And I said, I think I see what's going on here, Bill. If I say, okay, I'm 50, then you're going, next time it'll be 100. So what are the limits when you are going to get involved with forgiveness? He said, the limits, yeah. What are the limits that you would go? And he said, well, a long time ago, there was this man, they were nailing him to a cross. They had tortured him, and they were about to kill him, and he said, forgive them, they know not what they do. So if you have something come up that's worse than getting nailed to a cross, and being killed, come on back and we'll talk about it. So early on I saw that, and then I saw a lady on television forgive something that happened that day, and I suddenly realized that the parameters of forgiveness I had made very tight, and they weren't going to be expanding out, and I was going to be cheated out of the real rewards of it. And so there it appears again, and it appears in the prayer of St. Francis twice. So it's a very powerful word. So in the final analysis, step 10 is how to live in the moment. It's the day at a time step. It is, let's just stay in the now and leave the results to God. You don't have to have a plan. You don't have to figure things out ahead of time. Obviously, in the work situation, you're going to come up with, this is the way I think we can make some money and this and that. But in terms of our own personal happiness, personal peace of mind, we're the worst person of all to try and figure out what'll make us happy. It'll just never work. And so we leave that up to our Creator. And we simply try to become connected and a servant. In AA, that's the highest pay grade there is. Servant. You come in as a big shot, and then if you work real hard, you can go all the way up to servant. But it takes a lot of work to get there. So then we come to this interesting 11th step. First, we become a seeker. Seeking is very important. God couldn't would if he were sought. You remember that? Just seeking. And I have that little story about becoming a seeker. First time I heard the word was in grammar school, and we were being taught about hide and seek. And Emily was going to hide. And we were going to shut our eyes, and then we were going to see if we could find Emily. That sounded interesting for about 6 minutes. And then, quite frankly, I didn't give a damn where the hell Emily was. And I mean, what do I care? So I would call that a low-level seeking. And then the next one, which was definitely higher, was Easter baskets. That was like 6 pounds of chocolate hidden somewhere in the house. And one for my sister and one for me. And when my mother said, go, you had some seekers there. I mean, I was seeking, man. I'm going. But even with 6 pounds of chocolate, you know, 20 minutes... Could you give me a clue? Is it in this room? Am I getting close? You know, then you could cry and then they'd give it to you or something, but I just was tired of looking. But then when I was, I'd started college and we had a golden retriever and he ran away. And all my father knew was that he had run in the woods across the street and he just disappeared and couldn't find him. Well, I could tell you, I would be out in those woods and I'd go around the other side. I'd go around. If I was off at school, I'd come back a year later. I'm over there because there's a good chance I could find that dog. Now, that's a much higher level seeking. So where is our seeking level for God? Are we becoming a seeker? Do we want this sought through prayer and meditation? So let's decide to become seekers. We got to understand that this is all personal. It's just for you. The Step 11 that says this is an individual adventure. It's a different adventure for everybody in this room. You may end up going to some sort of a retreat. You may find a book that you read and it just gives you a wonderful way to do this. And then you find, and both books tell us that our libraries are full of books and that there are teachers. There's this all as part of seeking. And in the middle of the 12 and 12 is the prayer of St. Francis. And for some unknown reason, that prayer, to me, summarizes our entire program as well. It is total opposite of the material world, which we talked about earlier. We want to move from the material world into the spiritual world. What does it look like in there? And so just imagine trying to do this by yourself in the material world. Anytime you feel some hatred, you bring love. That's not what I felt before I got here. If it's wrong, bring a spirit of forgiveness. What do you mean? I just got wronged. So you can see it's all anti-ego. It's all anti-self. It is leading us towards unselfishness. And St. Francis was, the history of his life is really fascinating. And he ends up, he's rolling over in his grave because there's so many statues of him and churches and all of that. He didn't want any recognition. He just wanted to go and see how close he could come to getting rid of his ego and giving everything to other people. And so he starts with, where there's hatred, I may bring love. Where there's wrong, I bring a spirit of forgiveness. Where there's discord, bring harmony. Where there's error, bring truth. Where there's doubt, bring faith. Despair, bring hope. Shadows bring light. Sadness bring joy. And then he asks to be guided into comforting rather than to be comforted, and to understand than to be understood, and to forgive rather than to be forgiven. For it is by forgiving that we are forgiven. So we find this forgiveness again in the Lord's Prayer and in the Prayer of St. Francis, that the way that we forgive ourselves is by forgiving everything else. There's no separate step of self-forgiveness. It accomplishes automatically when we forgive everything that's been done to us. After all, how could you forgive someone who won't forgive? It just doesn't calculate. And so in the forgiving, we are forgiven. So in my own case, I'm more, when I talk about making amends, I'm more in Bill, the way he wrote it in the Big Book, where he said, it doesn't matter if the guy throws us out of his office. Remember that line? We went in and we did our thing. The person who's going to benefit the most by forgiving me is the man. He is going to now have peace when he's able to forgive. And it's, I like the idea of being forgiven, but it isn't a necessary component for me. If that's, because it could happen 5 years later, because that was the time schedule anyway. I just want to wrap this up. By re-emphasizing that when we're talking about these matters, we're talking about your taking care of yourself in growing spiritually. We got all kinds of things of helping people get sober, and we'll do all these things, but we don't want to miss out on the fact that this is the point of the whole program. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result. That's the result of working all these steps. So that's what we want to have. And to minimize it, or to say it would be nice, I'll get around to that, is to just cheat yourself out of what I think is the point of being alive. It's the point, if you finally can understand you, the universe, your life. You remember that quote, I don't know whether it's Ernie Kurtz or whatever, but I screw it up generally, but it says, in an almost magical manner, Alcoholics Anonymous was able to bring to its religious and non-religious members alike a view of the universe and their place in it, which is both comforting and exciting. In doing so, they manage to borrow from religion everything that's powerful and uniting, while politely declining everything that is self-serving and selfish. You might call it the spiritual heist of the century. And it was done unconsciously without realizing it. So, when you try to describe Alcoholics Anonymous, the best I can come up with, it's a happening. It just happened. It was never planned for. A lot of the plans that our early members had were negated. We're not going to give you a lot of money. You're not going to have paid missionaries. No drunk tanks. No, you can't have this. You know. No, you're not going to make any money. You're going to have to live in 70 different homes. Well, I mean, it was just... And yet this whole thing was being put together. And now that we can see how it was put together, we realize that there was something in the universe that decided that alcoholics don't have to stay in the dark caves anymore. And they lit a light, and each alcoholic hands the light to the next person, and they hand it to the next person, and pretty soon we're out of the darkness. But we have to maintain this thing, or it could blow out. Thank you all very much.
Okay, buddy. Here we go.